Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Mike Pesca. Mike is a journalist. He writes for Slate Magazine. He does some great work over there at Slate Magazine. He's the host of a daily podcast called The Gist, and he's just written a fascinating article called We're Much, Much Funnier Than We Used to Be. Mike, I hope that's true. Is it true?
Yeah, I am. I think you guys are. I've been listening for a couple years.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
It just seems like it.
All right, let's start at the very beginning. I think you started out your story talking about the Muppets, which makes sense, and how the Muppets have changed over the years. Take it away, Mike. What did you find?
So I got a DVD set of the first year of The Muppet Show, and I was excited to watch because I remembered The Muppets being fun and funny as a kid. Now, this was season one of The Muppets, and there were hits and misses, but what struck me was that the misses were so bad. There was this ongoing sketch called At the Dance where two Muppets would make jokes, but often the jokes weren't even bad jokes or jokes that didn't land. They were non-jokes and not of the current we're trying to be weird for some reason type non-jokes. And it just struck me that, oh my God, this show or a show of that quality or jokes of that quality could never happen now. Every single TV writer is just better than a slew of those jokes. And it turns out that actually Jim Henson recognized that problem and he fought with the network to get that writer, the main writer, fired off the show. But the fact is, the network was saying, this is a comedy writer. You have to have him writing these jokes. And so it did occur to me that this wasn't just in isolation. I remembered some of the TV shows of my youth, and maybe things like Gilligan's Island or Bewitched were a little broad. But if you went into comedies like the Sonny and Cher show, or when they broke up, just Sonny and just Cher, you cannot. I know variety shows aren't supposed to be cutting edge comedy, but they were so bad. They were just non-comedy, the kind of non-comedy where just barely it wouldn't exist today because the lowest writer on the comedy rung would be 10 times as good as these Sonny and Cher writers. And I guess the audience is also implicated, right? If people were laughing at it, they did it. If people laughed at Bob Hope specials, it wasn't just because Bob Hope was fooling them. They thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I thought Hee-Haw was funny. Now, come on, Mike.
I thought, you know, there is a great kind of corny humor that transcends everything. And that, especially those jokes in the corn patch, but they were actual jokes. My point is more that we used to have, if you look at old TV schedules, 1973, 1974, I went back, there were a couple nights a week without one sitcom, without one variety show trying to be funny. And so this means, and that was the only place to ever get humor, mass humor. You could, I guess, read an S.J. Perlman book or something. So you could sit at home and have, most Americans would sit at home and have zero access to professional humor on a night or two of the week.
Yeah.
That is inconceivable now. So we've kind of trained Americans to be funnier just by the sheer inundation of humor. And I see it. I don't walk down the street cracking up left and right. But just the regular person who's cracking a regular joke, the jokes are better, and professional comedy got better, too.
Mike, as I read your article, I thought The Muppets was a great starting point. But then in my head, I'm running other shows, and I'll use The Simpsons as a great example because consistently The Simpsons has been one of the funniest shows for two decades. But if you watch that first season or the first two or maybe even three seasons, the pacing was so different. It wasn't like it is now where you're just barraged with humor and jokes. There was a lot of downtime between those jokes.
Right. And The Simpsons came out of the gate. I guess they had to redo. They didn't recast Homer's voice, but they redid Homer's voice, and that made a big change. But after The Simpsons hit its stride, and some say season three or four is the best season of sitcom writing ever, all these people who were at home loving The Simpsons then go on to create their own shows, sometimes very much like The Simpsons. So you have Family Guy, and you have later on shows like Rick and Morty and Adult Swim, and these are like children of The Simpsons, but there's an arms race. So as they get more daring and more comedic and the cutaway jokes come faster and more furious, The Simpsons up their game, and we're training ourselves to have less hand-holding, less setups. You're absolutely right with the pace. The jokes can come a mile a minute. I mean, think about when Airplane came out in 1980 and no one had ever seen anything like it. I just rewatched, actually, Airplane 2. And in terms of, I used to think that was the densest thing I've ever seen in jokes per minute.
Yep.
Compared to most shows, most of the good shows on Cartoon Network or Adult Swim, fewer jokes per minute in Airplane than just exist on 12 different shows right now on TV.
All right, you had mentioned something in your article, which if we could go back to 1967, the Monkees won the Emmy for Best Comedy Series, beating out the Andy Griffith Show, Bewitched, Get Smart, and Hogan's Heroes. Not a lot of those were that funny. I liked the Monkees because I had a crush on Peter Tork. Well, really, all of them at one point. And it was funny and it was goofy and it was outlandish, but we were talking about Hogan's Heroes the other day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that really wasn't that funny.
Well, I had a crush on Colonel Klink. So
I get it. Totally get it.
Right? Yeah, I love a man in uniform with a monocle.
Yeah.
Now, Get Smart was funny.
Get Smart was very funny.
Who was the creator of Get Smart? It was Mel Brooks and Buck Henry,
yep.
Right? And it was also daring, but, you know, in terms of hand-holding, compare Get Smart to Blazing Saddles, there was a lot more, and I'm not just talking about the G to PG content versus the R. The Blazing Saddles jokes, the Young Frankenstein jokes, came much faster and much more furious. I do think it was a time of broadcast, and the important thing was to never leave anyone behind, and therefore the jokes couldn't be that daring. There was a watered-down process. But also, you know, by my calculations, during this time, there were, I don't know, 100 or 150 full-time comedy writers, TV comedy writers in the world. And now there are literally 10 times that amount. And you're just going to get a lot more quality when you get a lot more people into the pipeline.
Mike, if you look at the show that changed comedy the most, you'd be hard-pressed to find a show more than Saturday Night Live that altered our perception of what is and isn't humorous. But if you went back one generation to Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In and you watched those today, I hate to say it because I loved it when it was on, it doesn't hold up at all.
Yeah, I did watch Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In because after my article came out, people said to me, readers said, oh, those Muppet shows, those Muppet at the Dance segments, those were riffs on Rowan and Martin.
Yeah.
So, and I knew that abstractly, but I went back and watched. And what I would say is this. You have to realize that comedy is the thing that ages the worst out of all the art forms. You know, we could watch. There's some physical comedy and the Marx Brothers. That does well. But comedy that depends on, say, often clever wordplay, we don't understand what it is, and definitely comedy that riffs on current events, doesn't even have to be politics, just sort of things in the air, falls really flat. So if you watch the Rowan and Martin through that lens, I think it still scans as professionally done comedy.
Yes.
Goldie Hawn is still really charming, and Rowan and Martin still have pretty good shtick, and Artie Johnson, who just died, I mean, some of his impressions would be deemed politically incorrect.
Yes.
But there was something there that was legitimately professionally done and entertaining. But you're right. That was the vanguard.
Yeah.
And SNL, which came, you know, less than a decade later, you watch sketches from 1975, not all of them, but a bunch of them are fantastic. Now, it's funny, the sketches were a lot longer then.
Yeah.
I also got the season one DVD set of SNL. There were 7-minute sketches that didn't go anywhere in a weird way. So things have gotten tighter also with SNL, but you're absolutely right. SNL had more of the attitude of youth, and it still does.
Mike Pesca is our guest, journalist, host of Slate Magazine's daily podcast, The Gist, and just an all-in-all good writer. If you have any questions or comments for Mike or for Wendy and myself, 312-981-7200. A quick break and then more discussion. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Wendy Snyder. Mike Pesca is our guest. He's a journalist and host of Slate Magazine's daily podcast, The Gist. He's just written a great article called We're Much, Much Funnier Than We Used to Be. Boy, I hope that is true. Mike, how does attention span fall into this? You know, we suffer now from eroding attention spans. It's not what they used to be, where you can focus on something for a good long time. Everything has to be very quick now. How does that play into this?
Well, I've done some studies on attention span, or let me be honest, since I host the show, I've interviewed people who've done the studies, and what they actually say is that the attention span actually hasn't shrunk. It's just we can attend to material that's longer. We just choose to do it less, and also there's more choices. So what I think is the grammar of film, by which I mean how people understand the visual images has changed, and it's gotten condensed. So it used to be, I was watching Crocodile Dundee, which wasn't from 1942, right? But to establish that you were in Australia, you see the establishing shot of the plane. Then you see the plane coming out on the runway. Then the person comes out on the plane, and then we understand, oh, this is a visitor from somewhere else. Now it would be smash, some guy shows up, and he's like, what's going on here? I'm from Chicago. What I'm saying is that it used to always be you needed so much more establishment and so much more hand-holding, and now things can become much quicker, and usually quicker is a friend of comedy. In fact, when people are funny, sometimes we just say, oh, he's very quick.
Yeah.
When you get a funny show, too, it puts the pressure on writers of other shows to be better. So I think that helps escalate the funniness for sure. There are some great comedies, Bill. You turned me on to Baskets.
Yeah.
And that is such an interesting form of comedy because at one point you're laughing hysterically and on the other side of the coin, you're ready to cry.
I think that's absolutely true. I think a few things happen. One, it makes others up their game. But two, those kind of shows show, oh, funniness doesn't always have to be set up punchline. And when you do that, you know, a show like Fleabag, which just won the Emmy, is funny, but it's also a lot of other things. And if you look at the shows that were nominated for the Emmy, they're fantastic, and they're a lot of them are weird shows. Russian Doll is a weird kind of show that is both funny but also kind of trippy. And The Good Place is funny, but it's also extremely philosophical and religious. And I just think that there's been an explosion of the quality of humor and the kind of humor that we can pursue. Now, the interesting thing is, happens at the same time, there's this bit of a backlash concerning, oh, you can't say that and you can't joke about that. And I tried in my article to figure out, well, how is it that we're funny, you know, much funnier, like I point out, but also a comic, quote unquote, crosses the line, and societally we say you can't do that. We try to rein him in. And I came up with sometimes there are two things going on in a society at once, and I think we're living in one of those times.
Let me throw this at you too, Mike. I've noticed that comedy, specifically on television, is much more unapologetic in that. You'll see a show, 30 Rock is a great example of this. On a weekly basis, there were a couple of jokes on a 30 Rock episode that were so obscure, the references were so obscure, and they would play on such a low margin. I know a lot of people weren't getting the references, but they would do it anyway. They would just plow through it and move on. You didn't see that in the older days of television, did you?
Yeah, broadcasting versus narrowcasting. Now, 30 Rock was on NBC, so it's a broadcast network, but it didn't have great ratings, and also, I mean, it should have. I love that show. And also, you know, if it had 8 obscure jokes a show, it also had, you know, 98 non-obscure jokes.
Yeah.
Talk about a joke-dense environment. 30 Rock was exactly that. And then, you know, Kimmy Schmidt, which is in many ways the cousin of 30 Rock, can do that on Netflix. That's more, and NBC passed on that show, that's more an exemplification of the idea that, you know, there's all these different niches and all these different ways to do comedy. And if your aunt in Des Moines isn't going to get the joke, that doesn't mean it's a bad joke. Nothing against Des Moines. Lovely, lovely.
Right.
Does your theory hold up? Again, Mike's article is called We're Much, Much Funnier Than We Used to Be. And boy, I keep saying this. I so hope it's true. Does that hold up not just with television, Mike, but also with films and with novels and other sorts of media? Is it across the board that we're funnier than we used to be?
So we're, you know, our Twitter is much funnier than it was in 1972. yeah, I would say that
mine not so much. I'm getting bored with it.
No,
the same level. On my show, The Gist, I had a whole week. This article kicked off Comedy Week, and we did improv as a topic, you know, centered on Chicago, and we did sitcom. Sorry, late night, and we did stand up, and then we did a whole show on film. And what we found out, and I talked to John August, who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and a lot of the Tim Burton films, and I talked to Dana Fox, who has written a bunch of great rom-coms, and I talked to Vanity Fair's critic, and here's where we came out. The actual film comedies that are called film comedies are still being made, and they're still out there, and definitely indie film has given us great comedies. But what's really happened is that all these other genres of film have taken on more comedy than a similar genre would have in the past. So some of the best comedy is in these superhero movies, right? So when Superman 1, I guess Superman 2 was a little funny, but when superhero movies first started coming out, they were either dark or serious, or they were action films. And maybe you could say they had a joke or two, but they weren't very funny. Now, that's some of the best comedy. Thor Ragnarok was probably the best comedy movie of that year. And there are so many other genres where comedy has kind of embedded itself like a virus. And it's a reflection, I think, on that if you want to show the world as it really is, you will have more people making good jokes. The audience will not only get on their side, but see them as recognizable. So I think a movie like Ordinary People or Kramer versus Kramer, right? Two great movies that I think there are very few lines that attempted something like funny. If those were remade today, there'd be some really, truly funny scenes in them for the audience to connect to.
What I think is really cool is with comedy moving, evolving, and getting funnier, our kids are funnier. I think back of when I was in junior high and high school, I thought my material was A and was really good, and my friends as well. But now I have a 16 and 20-year-old, and they'll say something, and I actually find myself stopping and going, that was really funny. And Bill, I know your daughters are funny. It's like because of the evolvement of comedy, our kids are funnier.
My kids are 10 and 12, and they both have been doing improv for 3 and 4 years. My 10-year-old does stand-up. So, yeah, it's pretty
good. Excellent.
Pretty fun.
I want to ask you really quickly about something you mentioned about the late night shows and their comedic presence. Don't you think that this was a perfect example of the more competition, the better? And for a long time, it was just Johnny Carson at night. Other people tried to go against him, but no luck. But now you've got so many options in late night shows, so many different avenues of humor, and that benefits everybody, right?
I absolutely agree with that. There are different tones. Imagine if So what is The Tonight Show? That's the show that Fallon hosts. But that is a way different tone than Kimmel's show and a way different tone than Colbert's show. And imagine if we were just, I don't want to say stuck. Some people like The Fallon Show. I prefer Colbert. But if that was the only form of comedy and you only had, you know, 12 to 15 writers on staff as opposed to the 100-something writers on all the cable shows, on all the late-night shows, it would be a much worse comedic environment. So you're right about that. And also, big credit goes to David Letterman because he was as influential a figure in comedy as anyone, as Lorne Michaels, as the guys from Monty Python, as Mel Brooks, as anyone we could think of.
I love hearing you say that because we're both Wendy and I are nodding our heads going, yep, yeah, that's the guy. He deserves the credit.
And if we're much funnier than we used to be, why do we still laugh at stupid juvenile jokes? Is there room for both? Because some of them are still funny.
I think it's wired into our hard consciousness, and we can't, you know, laughter is an involuntary response. And there is something about, I don't want to use the cliche of slipping on the banana peel, but there is something about the quote-unquote America's Funniest Home Videos that, you know, once the guy does get nailed in the nuts with the wiffle ball.
Over at theslate.com, it's great. And this article in particular, We're Much, Much Funnier Than We Used to Be, really does open your eyes. Mike, terrific job. I hope we can talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thanks so much. Mike Pesca from The Slate.